listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Patrick Madden. On the show today, Rosemary Westwood interviews Nancy Davis, the Louisiana woman who made national headlines when she was denied an abortion despite carrying a fetus with no brain or skull. She later traveled for the procedure to New York. And StoryCorps travels to coastal Louisiana, and we'll hear that story. But first, it's Friday on Louisiana Considered, and we talk politics with Stephanie Gray. Stephanie, happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Stephanie, it seems to be a theme about what we talk about on Fridays here, but more battles between the New Orleans City Council and the mayor. The latest with the council seeking to dock Mayor Cantrell's pay over the recent travel spending. And if you want to sort of break down, because there's a couple of moving parts here, but give us the rundown of what's happening here. And plus, there are some other stories happening, too.
Right. Well, with the mayor and the council and, I'm starting to feel like I need a spreadsheet to keep track of all the different disputes going on because they kind of keep popping up. But the one a lot of people are paying attention to is her travel. It's, which kind of doesn't go to overall city management so much, but goes to, something that people can kind of relate to that, they don't get to fly first class and business class unless they pay out of their own pocket in general, unless they have some kind of, corporate job that allows it. Her job is she works for the taxpayers, and the taxpayers, it seems, do not allow that. So she's been asked to pay back about $30,000 for some travel expenses for upgrades that she did not pay for personally. The city paid for. She says she doesn't have to do that. She says it's a mental health issue. It's about her safety. She's representing the city of New Orleans, a whole bunch of things. And the council's having none of it. The council has asked her to pay it back and basically is now threatening to use its budget oversight to take it back from her, to withhold it from her paycheck. So this is a pretty extreme measure. When you're looking at the two branches of government that really have to work together, I don't know whether they'll go through with it. I don't know whether they legally can go through with it. Their lawyers say they can. But it just shows you how much this relationship is deteriorated. And then on top of that, the council is seeking a legal, basically, stay to prevent the mayor from spending money from something called the Wisner Trust. And that is a trust that was set up over a family trust set up over 100 years ago. Ownership of some land way outside the city, but where oil, it's in the oil patch. So it's lucrative. There are proceeds, some of which have gone to the city, and the mayor is using the money to fund some of her initiatives and her nonprofit and her, things that are not going through the council. And this has been a big fight. It was a fight under Mitch Landrieu, but basically the council is asking the courts to stop her from spending this money. So that's now happening. Yet another thing that's happened that our friend David Hammer over at WWL has been following is that, there are questions about a nonprofit that she controls and, runs some of her initiatives through. The city's inspector general is now looking at that.
This is the Forward Together New Orleans.
Forward Together, yes. And all of this on top of frustration over the roads, frustration over crime, frustration over trash pickup, all of the usual things that, are kind of quality of life issues that New Orleanians are up in arms over. And the recall. Right. So there is a recall that's not through the council, but is through a couple of people, including one former employee who kind of has turned on her. And it's, the bar is high. They need to collect 53,000 voter signatures, verified voter signatures by Mardi Gras, by Ash Wednesday, to get a recall question on the ballot. That's a very high bar, but they're being really aggressive. And you're starting to see recall Cantrell signs, yard signs pop up around town. So, you know, it has some legs. You know, whether it can kind of reach that bar is a question, but, you know, it's not fading away.
No. And this is Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden, and we're speaking with Stephanie Grace, editorial page director for the New Orleans Times-Picayune and New Orleans Advocate. Stephanie, let's talk about the upcoming governor's race.
Mm-hmm.
That's starting to get more traction. We spoke last week right. about Attorney General Jeff Landry. What are you seeing right now when it comes to that race and who the potential candidates might be?
Well, again, we're not talking about this fall. We're talking about a year from now. But this is the thing that people in Louisiana politics are focused on, not the midterms. Most of the congressional all of the congressional delegation, frankly, is expected to be reelected. You know, there's some ads now and things, but the energy is and the kind of intrigue is behind the governor race because it's an open seat, because John Bel Edwards is reaching the end of his two terms. So we will have a new governor. There's certainly a feeling among Republicans who dominate state politics that it's their turn, that we've had a Democratic governor for 8 years and there will be a Republican. And, you know, the legislature has become more and more Republican. So they're really kind of salivating over that. So the question is, which Republican? We talked last week, Jeff Landry, the attorney general, who's kind of he's really the Trumpy Republican in the field. My colleague Lanny Keller wrote a really good column this week that I recommend people check out on NOLA.com about that, about how, you know, that seems to be a really smart strategy. It's upsetting a lot of people because a lot of people, you know, don't want a Trumpian figure in the governor's mansion, but you know, he's got a lane and he's kind of owning it. And it's hard to tell who the opposition is going to be, who could stop him, certainly on the Republican side. And one of the interesting things that happened this week is Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, who is a fellow Republican who has long been talking about running for governor, expected to run for governor. He has sent out kind of a letter to some of his political colleagues saying, hey, what do you think of me running for governor? Maybe I should consider running for re-election and stay lieutenant governor. What do y'all think? You know, kind of testing support. And I think what that shows is that this field is very muddied, and there's a lot of interest in, you know, I wrote about this last week. I called it, you know, an anybody but Landry candidacy. But the question is, who is that going to be? And it doesn't really work if there are a lot of anybody but Landrys out there, because then they split the vote. So where will, you know, the kind of business community that doesn't want someone who will be seen as very, you know, kind of an ideologue in the governor's office, where do they go? Where do people who maybe would consider a Democrat but don't think that's realistic, so they want a more moderate Republican, where do they go? And where do they kind of focus their support so it's not split in a bunch of different ways, leaving an opening for Jeff Landry? So, you know, Billy Nungesser has kind of been expected to be one of those candidates. He's someone who is from a big Republican family. His father was an official in the Republican Party, close to Dave Treen, the first Republican governor of modern times. You know, but he's also someone who has attracted Democratic support, works well across the aisle, works very closely with John Bel Edwards, the Democratic governor. And, you know, he certainly was eyeing that role, but there are others. There's Treasurer John Schroeder, who has made moves about running. None of them have declared officially. And then there are the people who maybe could be persuaded to run, who might be seen as stronger candidates. There's Senator John Kennedy, who's up for re-election this year. There's Senator Bill Cassidy, who, you know, could get a lot of Democratic support probably for his vote to impeach Donald Trump, but then has angered a lot of Republicans. There's Garrett Graves, who's a congressman from the Baton Rouge area. And then, you know, there's always the possibility of someone that we're not even talking about, who we don't know very well, just kind of catching voter imagination. And that is something that happens pretty frequently. You know, if you've been through a lot of governor races, you know that the person you're talking about at this point is often not the person you're talking about a year from now. The kind of classic example of that is Buddy Romer, who was a congressman from North Louisiana, super smart, very charismatic. And he was running against a field of people who were considered much more likely. And he lightning struck, and, you know, this voters started to pay attention. He got newspaper endorsements. There kind of ended up being a series of events that kind of, you know, pushed him to the top. that could happen. I mean, Bobby Jindal wasn't supposed to be, the head of the Republican Party. You know, there are a lot of people with a lot more experience who wanted it in the last decade, and Bobby Jindal got it. So, honestly, Bobby Jindal was able to push Steve Scalise aside. Steve Scalise could be Speaker of the House. Steve Scalise is a good politician, but Bobby Jindal was the one who, in that moment when we were looking, this is when he was running for Congress. So Bobby Jindal, of course, ran in 2003 against Kathleen Blanco, came very close but lost, needed a place to go for a few years. That congressional seat was open in Metairie and Kenner. Bobby Jindal lived in Baton Rouge. Steve Scalise was ready to run for it. And all of a sudden, Bobby Jindal wanted it for a few years so he would have a place, you know, where he could run for governor. And Steve Scalise stood down and eventually ran for it and rose all the way to the top of the Republican establishment in Congress. So, you know, it just shows you that you don't know. You know, and there's a lot. I think the race will develop around Landry. I think that's what you can say at this point. Where it goes from there, a lot of questions.
Well, Stephanie Grace, we're going to have to wrap it up there, but we want to thank you for joining us here on Louisiana Considered. You can always read Stephanie's columns at NOLA.com, and you can hear her on Fridays on WWNO and WRKF. Stephanie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Patrick Madden. In August, Nancy Davis made national headlines after she was denied an abortion at Women's Hospital in Baton Rouge, despite carrying a fetus with no brain or skull that would not survive birth. In early September, Davis, a mother of three, finally had her procedure. Public health reporter Rosemary Westwood spoke with Davis and her attorney, Ben Crump, this week about what Nancy has been through and why she's sharing her story.
Nancy and Attorney Crump, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. Nancy, first, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty good.
Can you tell us how you eventually ended up at a Planned Parenthood in New York for your procedure?
Yes, ma'am, I certainly can. Well, for one thing, the doctors in Louisiana, my doctor in Louisiana, was clearly scared of prosecution and maybe being fined. So therefore, I went somewhere where the laws were clear and they were confident to do the procedure and provide top-notch care.
And why New York? Was that just at most convenient for you, or did you have support there? How did you choose New York to have the procedure?
Well, the doctors in New York were very, very confident. They reached out. They provided awesome hospitality. So that's why I chose New York.
And what was it like walking into the clinic that day? I think at that point it had been at least a month since you'd, maybe a little longer since you'd had the diagnosis. That's a long time to wait for this procedure. So how did it feel walking into the clinic that day?
It felt horrible. I mean, it was devastating. You know, it was traumatizing to even make that decision as a parent, you know.
And what about since then? How have you felt since you were able to get this procedure?
Well, I feel as though we made the best decision for our baby as well as ourselves.
Can you just remind our listeners, they probably heard this because your story has been so public, but Why did it feel to you that the best decision was to have an abortion?
Yes, ma'am. Well, 10 weeks into my pregnancy, my baby was diagnosed with a lethal and fatal condition called acrania, which pretty much those babies die within minutes or they die stillborn. So the only thing that came to my mind whenever we assessed the situation and analyzed it was that I was carrying my baby to bury my baby. So that's why we made that decision.
And Attorney Crump, you're a civil rights lawyer, and people might not typically equate that with abortion rights. Since you've been representing Nancy, you've helped raise the profile of her case. You both appeared on the Dr. Phil show. And I wondered why you wanted to represent Nancy and what you are hoping to achieve by making people aware of her case.
I understood that Nancy was very symbolic of many of the Black women in the state of Louisiana. As we understand it, Louisiana has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the country, especially as it relates to Black women. Disproportionately, Black women die during childbirth in the state of Louisiana. And so when you think about the fact that you had Nancy Davis, this young Black woman who was told that her baby was going to die and that she could not have an abortion because the state of Louisiana enacted very vague and ambiguous laws to have a chilling effect, not only on medical doctors' administration of abortions, even if they knew that it was going to be a situation where the baby was not going to survive, but it had a chilling effect on the women of Louisiana, and I would imagine a great effect on Black women in Louisiana. And so we wanted to use whatever influence we had to let Nancy Davis know that she was not alone and that she could transform this tragic circumstance into one of triumph where she could help other women, especially Black women in the state of Louisiana and all across America. And that's why we got involved. When Nancy called us, we said we will not let you be by yourself.
Do you think abortion rights are civil rights?
I absolutely think that abortion rights are similar to civil rights in the fact that my mother, God bless her, is as pious of a Christian as anybody else. But even my mother says, that's my beliefs. I don't want to have to force my beliefs on somebody else. Every woman should be able to choose for themselves. Now, do I think abortion is akin to slavery? No, I think that slavery was such a inhumane, cruel dynamic that is unlike any other dynamic ever in the course of human history. But I do think abortion is involuntary servitude on a woman who by law cannot make the decision for herself and her body and the person that she is carrying, who, regardless of people want to admit it, there is nobody that has a closer bond to the fetus inside her than that mother. And that mother, I feel, has a right to make her decision that is going to affect her life. And if you don't believe in abortion, then don't have an abortion. But if people want to have a right to choose, then we should respect the woman's right to choose.
And Nancy, what about you? You've spoken to so many journalists by now. I mean, first, I'm just wondering what that media attention has been like during a time that you've said, you know, many times has been traumatic and really difficult for you.
It has been, I mean, the media attention has been fine. You know, we're just sharing our truth with everyone. So that's what makes it so much easier.
And what do you hope will come from this? You've spoken about not wanting others to go through what you're having to go through. What do you want people to think of or take away from learning about what's happened to you?
Well, one thing I learned is that people, from dealing with this situation, is that people have control over people's lives and can put other people's lives in danger. You know, and it shouldn't be that way. You know, so I would like to bring consciousness and awareness to this issue and just help as many women as I possibly can who are in the same or similar situations as myself.
That's Nancy Davis, a Baton Rouge woman who traveled to New York for an abortion, and her lawyer, Ben Crump. They spoke with public health reporter Rosemary Westwood. And you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden. On NPR this morning for StoryCorps, members of a tribal community in Louisiana reflected on strong storms and a vanishing coastline that is costing them the land where they've lived and farmed for generations. Here is NPR's Steve Inskeep introducing the StoryCorps segment.
Hey, it's Friday, which is when we hear from StoryCorps. In Louisiana, members of the Jean Charles Choctaw Nation are losing their homes to a vanishing coastline. They're leaving the land where they lived and farmed for generations because of stronger and more frequent storms. Albert Nakhan, the tribe's chief, came to StoryCorps with his nephew, Demi Nakhan Jr., to talk about growing up on Isle de Jean Charles in the 50s and 60s.
We could go in anybody's house and get a drink of water or grab something to eat and then go out and play. It was like a big old happy family. People took care of each other.
And it was peaceful, quiet.
It was beautiful, yeah. We had some palmettos and grapefruit trees. Life was easy. Life was simple. Life was great. But I didn't want to admit that the island was disappearing.
So when did you start to notice that the island was changing?
I can see that when we'd have a hurricane, the tidal wave would uproot the marsh, and then it was all open water. I remember Audrey in 1957, and then Hilda in 64, Betsy in 65, and Carmen in 74. But Ida, a year ago, that's the worst hurricane that I've seen. We realized that we was washing away. And now, what we used to walk at, now we use boat to travel in. And where we used to trap and raise cattle, now we shrimp. So what concerns you most right now?
My kids and grandkids won't have a chance to live on the island. I didn't have everything. I didn't have name brand shoes, but I was dressed. I went to school, had food on the table because my dad worked hard. And I learned to survive. What gives you hope?
After hurricanes, we all come together in support of each other. And I think we still believe in each other.
Albert and Demi Nakhan Jr., their tribe is working to move the entire community to higher ground. This interview will be archived at the Library of Congress.
That was StoryCorps from this morning. I'm Patrick Madden, and that's going to wrap up our show today on Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. Our managing producer is Alana Schreiber. Our digital editor is Caitlin Umholtz. Today's engineer was Garrett Pittman. You can listen to Louisiana Considered Monday through Friday at noon and 7:30 p.m. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcasts. And Louisiana Considered wants to hear from you. Please fill out our pitch line to let us know what kinds of story ideas you have for our show. And while you're at it, you can fill out our listener survey. We want to keep bringing you the kinds of conversations that you want to hear. Louisiana Considered is made possible with support from our listeners. So thank you. I'm Patrick Madden. Have a great weekend, and we will be back here on Monday.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience. More at rouses.com, with additional support from the Sazerac House.